This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello, this is Neil Mitchell from 3AW. What are you listening to? Well, you should know. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Isaac and Misha Ketchell, editor of The Conversation. It's my great pleasure to welcome back to Saturday Magazine Peter Tulip, chief economist at the Centre for Independent Studies, and has worked, Peter, the US Federal Reserve Board of Governors, the OECD and the Commonwealth Treasury. I reckon you might like being an economist. Is that a fair thing?
It's one of my personality failings, yes. but glad to be with you.
No, look, it's great. We had, you know, some really positive listener feedback last time you're on. And, of course, since then, we've seen Philip Lowe, his, you know, the worst kept secret in Canberra, probably, that his term wasn't going to be renewed. Michelle Bullock, the current deputy governor, has been appointed as governor. My first question, if I may, and I know Misha and Isaac have some, is Michelle Bullock has 40 years at the RBA, and she's spoken about, for the next 12 months, thereabouts, some culture change at the RBA. Can having worked at the RBA, can Michelle bring about cultural change, having been there for 40 years, or is she best equipped to deal with that change because she understands the culture?
I think that's a great question, and I think that will have been one of the very top questions that the government was pondering as it made this choice. So Michelle is very well qualified, but she's thrived under the old culture. So you've got to be a bit suspicious that a creature of the old guard is going to put through the big reforms that the government and the RBA review panel have asked for. Anyway, as I say, I think that was the top question that the government was asking itself, and it's clearly reassured itself that Michelle is both enthusiastic and capable of putting through a change in culture. So, I mean, you do need to know something about an institution to change it.
Yeah.
So a bit of experience is a plus. But, and she has apparently been very actively involved in the RBA review, which is something I didn't know until Jim Chalmers talked about it yesterday. So she's apparently passes that test fairly comfortably.
So, Peter, does changing the culture really matter? You know, when you compare it to something like, you know, the having the, you know, 2-3% target inflation band, I mean, that to me would seem to be the significant thing that defines the work of the RBA, whether it has 8 meetings a year or 11 or there's a press conference or not. Does any of that stuff really matter?
Yes, it does matter. I think you're right that the targets of the central bank are what's most important, but it's a bit pointless worrying too much about how they're specified if the central bank isn't going to implement them. And this was a big problem under Phil Lowe, that he showed a real lack of willingness to pursue the bank's targets. So before the pandemic, inflation was well below the 2-3% band, and unemployment was well above estimates of its sustainable rate. But Phil Lowe kept it that way. I mean, that was a deliberate choice because he was interested in this. He had essentially made up this extra objective of financial stability, which most other central bankers do not think is a legitimate object of monetary policy.
How do you define...
That's a fairly long answer, and I think I only got to half of what you're asking.
No, that's interesting, though, because just before I mangled sort of trying to explain Nauru, and I'd love you to, if you could please, for the listeners, just have a go at correcting and basically explain what that concept is and what the concept of financial stability is, as opposed to sort of the 2-3% rate?
Yep. Sure. So macroeconomists think that there is an unemployment rate that is difficult to go below. And in particular, we estimate that at currently about 4.5%. And when you go below that, as we currently are, the labour market gets too tight. And now, it's not as though we think low unemployment is a good thing. It's clearly a bad thing. We don't like people losing their jobs. But a super tight labour market, the way we have at the moment, past experience has shown that that's not sustainable. It leads to labour shortages and big increases in money wages, which are soon followed by increases in prices. So we saw this in 2008, just before the GFC. We saw it back in the 1970s, that when the unemployment rate falls below what the textbooks call the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment, though I think the trend in modern central banking is just to refer to it as the long-run sustainable rate of unemployment. In the past, when we've fallen below that rate, it's led to accelerating inflation, which has been very, very unpopular. And central bankers try hard to avoid that, and they want to stabilize the unemployment rate at a sustainable rate so we don't go above it or we don't go below it.
So you were just saying a moment ago, though, that Philip Lowe was allowing a slightly higher rate of unemployment
yep.
than you might be comfortable with because of another concept of stability. So what's that concept of stability?
So prior to the pandemic, when we had these estimates of the sustainable unemployment rate of, I think, about 4.5%, the RBA consciously allowed the unemployment rate to go up towards about 6%. And one result of that was that the inflation rate fell well below its target. The reason it did that was because it was worried about rapid growth in debt and in rapid growth in house prices. And Phil Lowe actually made his academic reputation by working on this issue, saying that monetary policy shouldn't allow unsustainable credit booms, as we've had several times in the past, because he thought that a big burst in credit was going to be unsustainable and would lead to a crash with bankruptcies and bank failures and so on. And thinking on this has evolved over the decades since Phil did his pioneering work on that. And people don't disagree with his original analysis. They just think that it was incomplete. And in particular, we now know, and by that I guess I'm talking, the strong consensus amongst central bankers is that, yes, we do have to worry about financial stability. We clearly don't want a repetition of the global financial crisis or some of the other financial crises we've had, but monetary policy is a bad tool for dealing with it, partly because you can jack up interest rates and that will stop people borrowing, but it also, as it did before the pandemic, put a lot of people out of work. And so while it reduces the growth in debt, it also destroys people's capacity to pay the debt. And that actually is worse. And so while monetary policy is a bad instrument for dealing with financial stability, now central banks have good instruments, things like loan-to-value ratios, capital requirements, and other prudential controls. We have a better way of avoiding financial crises without the collateral damage that Phil Lowe created before the pandemic.
Can I ask, Peter, the new Reserve Bank, call it RBA 2, is going to go to 8 meetings a year rather than 11, and call it a compulsory press conference afterwards by the governor. So does that mean that the Reserve Bank is only going to review interest rates 8 times a year?
That's the default assumption.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, the procedures are to review it 11 times a year. And so they're cutting that down to it by about a third. That doesn't stop them having unusual meetings. If suddenly financial markets explode, then they would very rapidly get on their Zoom and talk about that. But in normal circumstances, they'll only be meeting 8 times a year, yes.
Which, okay, there's always been the ability to have, emergency or extraordinary meetings. I'm just wondering whether that reduction from 11 to 8 that's come out of the review. So the review is saying, well, actually you only need to review this 8 times a year, or, at least 8 times a year. Previously it was 11. Is that review saying that perhaps the gap between reviews was too small? Because this is the 8 times a year. Is it going to be every one and a half months, perhaps?
Yeah, that's a good description. One of the problems that the review mentioned was that the bank was too focused on the day-to-day flow of data and just, what was happening today relative to yesterday, and not thinking enough about longer-term strategic issues. For example, the goals and objectives that we were just talking about in previous questions.
Yeah.
The review complained that the board seemed to have given very little thought to some of those things because it was just focused on the minutiae of the economic data. And so the hope is that with less frequent meetings, they will think about some of the bigger, longer-term issues. I might say, I think this particular recommendation might be the single most popular one with the staff of the RBA.
Now, I'm going to throw you a complete curveball here, Peter. The deputy governor's role is going to be advertised. You know, would you be interested in that? I'm not on the interview panel, so that's okay for me to ask.
Sure, but I think there are higher qualified people ahead of me in the queue.
It might be worth it just to put it in to rattle a few cages, perhaps.
Well, it sounds like, Peter, you've got some clear ideas about the ways you do things differently. So just to recap, from what I understand from what you said, one was that Philip Lowe was perhaps too conservative, allowed unemployment to be too high for too long because of a concept of stability. And the second you said was that interest rates shouldn't be the only lever that the Reserve Bank pulls in terms of managing the economy. It should look to other measures. I'm just wondering, do you think that Michelle Bullock will reflect those criticisms and move in those directions or not?
That's a great question, and we don't really know because the process at the Reserve Bank has been that no one says much, and they certainly don't express disagreements with policy. So we now know, for example, from the staff survey that was published with the RBA review, that huge numbers of staff thought that Phil Lowe's policy was very, very wrong. But we didn't know that at the time because, there's the bank doesn't disclose internal disagreements. So whatever Michelle Bullock's views on monetary policy are, the policy of the bank is to have kept them a secret from us until now. Well, so we'll learn now, and hopefully there are no big surprises.
Peter,
no unpleasant surprises.
Sorry, it's Paula. Can I just ask you one question as well before we wrap up? One of the things we were debating with Misha before is the makeup of the actual board itself. And, you know, whenever a press statement comes out from the RBA, it's very much been Philip Lowe's view represented of the board. What should that board makeup be? Obviously, you want the best knowledge, and we've talked about Misha's view. You know, we want some people with good economic backgrounds, but also some lived experience. What do you think of the current board, and what changes do you think should be made?
I think this is the leading recommendation of the RBA review, is that monetary policy should be decided by monetary policy experts, not by business leaders. So overwhelmingly, the board should be composed of people with expertise in monetary policy. Within that, you want a mix of, in particular, opinions. So you want what we call some hawks and some doves, you know, some people who like economic expansion, others who are focused on inflation. You want a mix of skills. So you want some people very interested in empirical work, some interested in theory. The lived experience you mentioned. So there are 27 million examples of that in Australia.
Yes.
And they're all a bit different. And prioritizing one guy's anecdotes over someone else's anecdotes in the past, I think, has led to bad policy decisions. I mean, so we have, the board has a very active liaison program that's intent on going and talking to a very wide cross-section of the Australian economy. And that is an efficient and representative way of conveying the lived experience of Australians towards monetary policy. And I think that's a better way than just picking some guy at random and saying, okay, your experience is now going to be driving monetary policy.
I think we agree with you. I think the point we were making was we wanted qualified economists who understood monetary policy, but also had a foot in the real world, were able to try and talk about examples of the impact of the decisions on the common person. Peter, sadly, we're out of time. We've got to move on with our next guest, but thank you ever so much for joining us here on Saturday Magazine this morning.
Yes, thank you.
My pleasure.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Isaac and Misha Ketchell. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.